Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
But first this morning, guitar player and singer Joe Bonamassa was in Ireland earlier this week to announce details of two nights at the Marquee in Cork next July. Joe Bonamassa is a star of the blues world, compared to the likes of Eric Clapton and Buddy Guy. And Rory Gallagher has been a huge influence on him since he was just a little boy. Well, Joe Bonamassa and Rory's brother Donal Gallagher came into studio to talk to me about Rory and about the concerts. And I began by asking Donal to tell me just how great Joe's stature is in the guitar world.
Joe Bonamassa is right now probably one of the it is the greatest name in guitar playing. To me, a parallel with Rory, the same ethos and love of music. And I would kind of describe both Joe and Rory as having watched their careers being students who become the masters. And the homage they paid to guitar players who went before them and their peers, it's kind of the musician's gift. It's the wheels within wheels of music. And I just recognised straight away in Joe, he had that same heartbeat as Rory had.
Thank you very much. It means a lot to me. And you know, we've known each other a long time. And when we got the phone call from Peter Aiken and Donald and the Gallagher family and about these shows next year, I couldn't get the word yes, you know, out fast enough. And then the next day I thought about it. Oh my God, this is going to be a huge mountain to climb for me. I mean, obviously I have such reverence for that music that your brother did, and I want to do it right. And I know I'm not Rory Gallagher. I'm Joe Bonamassa that's going to play some Rory Gallagher songs. And it's a celebration of this great catalog of music that your brother left us. And it's going to be a lot of fun, but it's going to be a lot of work. But I'll look back on my life when I'm, you know, retired, and I'm going to say, wow, I'm so glad I did this. And I'm so lucky to have great friends like yourself and that put me in this position, because there's a lot of guitar players that would have loved to sign up for a project like this.
But not a lot of guitar players, Donal, as good as Joe Bonamassa.
Oh, yeah, and I'm surprised about the word retirement.
Well, you know.
When he's 95.
A lot sooner than that, but, you know, we got time, you know. Yeah. You know, it's the thing about, you know, being in this world of guitar playing is there are comparisons to, you know, you're always compared to somebody else. And, you know, like you were saying earlier, it's not a competition. It's just how you hear it and how you play it, how you, you know, interpret the music. And it's the exact same thing that I do instinctually is it's like, yeah, I know people that listen to my music, but like, listen to where I got it from, you know, check out, you know, Rory's catalog, check out Eric Clapton, check out, you know, cause I came over here before I went to Chicago. Like when I was a kid, I listened to Eric Clapton and Jeff Beck and Led Zeppelin and Rory Gallagher and Gary Moore before I, you know, proverbially went to Chicago and Mississippi. And, you know, that was just how my father's musical taste and how I was raised. And, you know, to get to do this is just, it's surreal to me. It's surreal and a great honor and like I said, a challenge of a lifetime.
Joe, will you tell us a little bit about, you were very young when you started playing guitar. You mentioned your dad there and those influences. Would you just tell our Irish listeners how it began for you, how you became this amazing guitarist?
Well, I'm 47 years old. And by the time we do the gigs, I'll be 48. And I've been playing guitar for 43 years. Wow. I started when I was 4. And my dad was a musical guy. He loved music. He played guitar. My grandfather was a trumpet player, pretty accomplished. He played in U.S. military bands and could read charts and loved big band jazz. And my great-grandfather played trumpet, and he was very accomplished, had like 60 trumpet students, would tour around the upstate New York and regionally. So I'm the fourth generation of Bonamassas to make a living playing music. And that's how I got my start. And, you know, if you look at old footage of me from when I was 12 or 13, and then you hear me talk now, I haven't matured at all. I mean, I'm still passionate about guitars and playing and music and discovering things. And, you know, that journey never ends. You know, it's, you can never listen to enough music because it's almost infinite. Mm-hmm. You could spend three lifetimes listening to stuff and still not find that one gem that, you know, you didn't get to, you know.
You must have, though, had quite a different life as a child, Joe, because you were playing guitar, as you say, so very young. Was it very different?
Yeah, I was a showbiz kid. I started my career when I was 11 years old, you know, and I would sit in with blues bands. The first blues band that ever let me sit in was James Cotton, the legendary harmonica player from Chicago.
You're impressed, Donald.
And then I got to meet a guy named B.B. King and Buddy Guy and John Lee Hooker, and they were all super nice to me. And I think initially I was a curiosity. You have to understand, this is before the internet. This is before YouTube and all that. I was just a kid that had a little bit of a buzz going, hey, there's this kid coming around blues festivals, check him out, he's pretty good. And, you know, next thing I know, I meet a guy named Danny Gatton. Next thing I know, I meet all these great players and musicians that kind of like, hey, you're pretty good, let me give you some advice. And then a couple years later, when I was 13, I was lucky enough to meet a guy who's about 20 feet behind me, and that was Roy Wiseman, my manager. And he and I have been together now almost 34 years. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at any music business, you know, story like myself, you know, there's not many artists that have been with their managers for 30 plus years. And so it's just been this really organic team that we've put together since I've been a kid. And blink an eye, 36 years goes by, and you know, I'm here in Dublin talking to you, and it's great.
And funny enough, when I said I was interviewing this morning, Joe, lots of people were really into music. You'd be their hero in terms of guitar playing. But for you, who are your heroes, if you have any, apart from a lot of the names you've just mentioned, of course? And when did you first become aware of Donal, who's beside you, his brother Rory Gallagher?
I was introduced to Donal through my ex-girlfriend, Sandy Tom. And this was probably 12 years ago, 13 years ago. And she goes, I have a surprise for you. I was playing the Hammersmith Odeon. And I have a surprise for you. And the next thing I know, she lets out that, like, you know, Donald Gallagher is coming down and he's bringing something. And I'm like, oh, my God, I think I can guess what it is. And you showed up with your son, Daniel, and out of this little gig bag that said Fender on it, comes out the iconic guitar that, you know, I would look at pictures of, you know, in books and on record and magazines, and it's in my hands. And he's like, you can play it if you want. And I'm like, And the first question I asked, I think I go, are these Rory strings? Because I don't want to be the guy who breaks one of Rory's strings. I'm like, and, you know, there's a fine line between famous and infamous. You know, like I would go into that infamous category. And they're like, no, we changed the strings. I'm like, okay. So we played it. And then a couple of years later, you brought it down to the Royal Albert Hall. And you know, we kind of struck up this friendship. And you know, just based out of, you know, I hope, you know, you could see how much reverence I have for Rory and how much it's influenced me, because when I was learning the songs just for the little rollout that we did, I was going, wow, this stuff is really in my DNA.
And Donald, why did you do that? Why did you bring Rory's obviously incredibly famous guitar along to Joe? Joe obviously meant a lot to you.
Well, certainly. I mean, it was the perfect opportunity for me because, like anybody's passing, you're in the dumps for, you know, and you're trying to get up and you're kind of in that sort of mind frame of mind, you know, if people forget and, you know, you'd love to back and say, reassure yourself, but you can't. But at that time, I was going through an album one day and I got Joe Bonamassa's album and I put it on and I couldn't believe he'd covered a Rory song. The comfort I got from that, and I thought, oh my God, I have to meet this guy. This is such a wonderful tribute to Rory. This is the best tribute at that point in time that anybody could have done, is to play the Rory song.
Can you remember what song it was?
Cradle Rock.
If I was a baby, would you let me fall? If I was an outlaw, would you have me call? If I
amazing thing that night when Joe played it live, and I think it was streamed in America. There was some, and I actually got a call from the guy at the custom shop in Fender in America, and I'd been out to California because they wanted to have the Strat back and examine it and do all this. So I got flown to America, and this guy called me from California, and he said, "That's John Bonamassa playing Rory's Strat." He said, "I can tell from here it's bouncing back to California."
For non-guitar players listening to this, did it feel special to play Rory's guitar?
Well, very few instruments go from being a guitar, because when Leo Fender's company made it in 1961, it was a Sunburst Stratocaster. And they made a lot of Sunburst Stratocasters that and its journey from Fullerton, California, ended up at Crowley's Music in Cork. And, you know, Lord knows how it made it there, but it made it there. And Rory bonded with that one probably more than any of the guitars that he owned. And he had a lot of instruments. And he played it on so many gigs that it wore out. I mean, it wore out in the most beautiful way, you know, and it was the most honest way a guitar could wear out. And it's not worn out. It's just it's been played. It's not in mint condition. And very few instruments go from being a guitar to a cymbal. And that guitar is a cymbal. To anybody in the guitar world or here in Ireland, if you show them a picture, okay, of the Irish flag, they go, "That's the Irish flag." Mm. If you show them a picture of Rory's guitar, they're going to go, "That's Rory's guitar." And it has become a symbol for the great music that has come out of Ireland. And very few instruments, you know, there's maybe a couple of Jimi Hendrix's guitars that do that, maybe an Eric Clapton guitar, Stevie Ray Vaughan's guitar, you know, all the icons of this kind of music, and Rory is right up there with them. So when I played it, you know, again, you're equally terrified as you are honored by it. And I was like, "I don't want to break." I was like, "I don't know." You know, like, I'm twisting knobs. And I'm like, "Man, I hope it's still, you know, I hope I don't do anything." And then you just calm down. You go, like, I don't break my own guitar, so I'm not going to break this one.
Yeah. And you love playing a lot of Rory songs. Like you mentioned earlier, Cradle Rock, Don't. Obviously, you were so moved when you heard Joe play that. You also love A Million Miles Away.
A Million Miles Away.
A lot of people love that.
Tattooed Lady, Million Miles Away, I Wonder Who, a lot of stuff from Irish Tour 74. The other thing I want to really stress is there will be an acoustic element to this, because Rory was known mainly, especially in America, as an electric player. But if you do a deep dive into his acoustic work, it's amazing stuff. The way he played the mandolin and sang, the way he played the dobro. His acoustic guitar playing and those songs as well need to be in the celebration show, you know, is just as important as the big songs and the big hits.
And, you know, Donald, just to remind people this morning, I mean, we heard Joe there. He started as a very young guy playing the guitar. His dad, right back to his great-great-granddad, you know, they were all musicians. Where did Rory Gallagher begin? Because there'll be a lot of younger people listening this morning who don't know that, Donal. Like, where did, A, his genius come from? And B, when did he, you think, pick up a guitar for the first time?
Well, like Joe, it's in the family. My father was, in his day, he was an Ulster champion accordion player. He had his own Cayley Dance Orchestra, called the Inishowen Cayley Dance Orchestra, which was much bigger than the Cayley Band. So it was quite a stretch. But then the Warriors finished all that off. He was from Derry, so he crossed over the border and joined the Free State Army. And that's how he ended up in Cork and how he met my mother. And my mother was a fantastic singer, loved the stage and theatre. Because wrapped up in all the music is a lot of, I wouldn't say theatrical, as Rory wasn't a theatrical, but actually the stagecraft was there. And he knew how to engage with his audience. So as a youngster, in that time we would have been in Derry. And Rory, I remember my mother loved music and she sort of got the radio, primitive kind of radio. And when the parents went there and look at Rory start surfing to all these stations from Hilversum to Luxembourg, BBC, Chris Barber on the BBC would have his the Chris Barber hour. And Chris Barber's banjo player was Lonnie Donegan. Everybody from John Lennon to Eric Clapton's hero was Lonnie Donegan. That was started the guitar craze. So then it was coming to Christmas and Rory was trying to describe what he wanted for Christmas. And they were talking guitar. The word guitar wasn't there. And I remember Rory frustrated getting a round cheese box and a ruler and an elastic band and trying to make strings. And then going, a banjo. And then my dad, because of all his music pals, he brought this guy down and it was Charlie McGee. There was this huge guitar. I mean, it was like seemed like a double bass to Rory. I mean, it was like, the guy sang The Homes of Donegal, like, and Rory's eyes were like saucers.
That was the moment.
We get a guitar and it was a plastic ukulele style guitar that had the sticker of Lonnie Donegan. And that was Christmas. But actually when it arrived, it wasn't Lonnie Donegan, it was Elvis Presley. Christmas morning, and I'm kind of disappointed. You go, no, Elvis is great, but yeah, I want Lonnie, you know, and then it was, of course, I want both.
Yeah.
But, so it started from there.
And it's so interesting, the partnership between you two now, because Peter Aiken was telling me the other day, one of the key reasons he feels so passionate about this is his own father, of course, Jim Aiken. He had actually got Rory to play in Belfast in 1972 in a hugely important concert when no one would go to the North. And it meant so much to him and to so many people in the North.
Absolutely. And Jim, Peter's father, was an absolute gentleman. He was a school teacher. And we actually met him when Rory went up with his band Taste, because he decided to go professional and base himself in Belfast. Made quite a name for himself instantly in Belfast, and where he was getting back to London, there was more communication between Belfast and London than the visiting bands like Cream. So the next thing, he landed a slot with on the Cream tour. They were doing three nights and met with Eric and Jack and Ginger, the whole thing. So, and then John Mayall's Blues Breakers and Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac came over. So it was a great way, actually, without having to be in London where you were starving.
And I think, am I right in this? The set list for the marquee gigs, which you're both doing together, they're based on Rory's 1974 tour of Ireland. Would that be correct to say?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's going to start there. How it expands is still up to, you know, we're just going to make a great show out of it. It's a celebration, not a tribute, you know, because there's a lot of people that do great note for note tributes to Rory. I don't have that skill set, you know, so we're going to do our versions of it. But it's interesting what you were saying. It's great perspective for somebody like me who's American to see where your heroes music does come from. And it's when you introduce the American traditional blues to the traditional folk music of Ireland, and you go, okay, now I get it. You know, so, you know, to me, when I heard Irish Tour 74, it floored me. I was like, I've never heard anything like this. Like this energy, this just passion and slide. You know, Rory was a wonderful slide guitar player.
And when you do say a song like Who's That Coming, I know you'll definitely do that, won't you? Will that be your interpretation of Rory's song? I mean, how closely will you play it to adapt it to the way you are, or the way he would have done it?
I would. We obviously do it in the spirit of. We do the same basic, same template and arrangement, same feel. And I try to go in and find the guitar phrases and the vocal nuances that need to be there without trying to mimic. It's a real challenge. This is, like I said, it's going to be the biggest challenge of my life, musically. And I've tackled some giants in my career. We did a tribute to Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf. We did Beck, Page and Clapton. We did The Three Kings, which was a Grammy nominated record, in 2015. BB, Freddie, and Albert. This is the first and probably the only show, specialty show, that I'll do in my career that is solely dedicated to one person. But again, you know, the natural boundaries will I think sort that out. I'm not the same singer as Rory was. I'm not the same guitar player. I'm a different artist, but have it in my DNA, and I have real reverence for the music. So I got this. I won't let you down, Donald.
That guitar you all spoke about earlier so movingly, that's up for auction, isn't it, Donald? Tell me about this.
Well, it's after numerous years of trying to find a home, and I don't want to be pointing fingers at any institutions or and my dealings with institutions have led to a certain frustration. We're all on the conveyor belt of life, and you sort of, without being morbid about it, and I was very ill for a couple of years. In recent times, I've recovered. So, and all these decisions come into, and we're talking about a store full of stuff. I know we're speaking about the guitar, but it's his collection of instruments. And like Joe, who's an amazing collector, it's a very hard decision. I put it to my family, particularly the boys who can play guitar. In the end, the insurance, the cost, the only way was to put them in a bank vault.
And I know you feel very strongly, Joe, you're a collector, but that this guitar should stay in Ireland, don't you?
I've been saying since day one, when Donald and the family announced the auction, as one of the bigger guitar collectors in the world, my phone had about 150 text messages from my friends and colleagues and collectors and people who are trying to spend my money. And my initial reaction was, that guitar doesn't, it can't leave Ireland. No. It doesn't feel right for me. Whoever buys it has to be very sensitive to that. Because it is a symbol. It's more than just a guitar. It's a symbol of pride for this country that should be here. And it's, you know, and I feel much empathy for you, Donald, because it's having a collection of that magnitude is a weight. And not a lot of people, it's like, you got 700 guitars, Joe. How lucky are you? Yes, I'm lucky. But I'm also the custodian for these things. And if something ever happened to these very rare, well-preserved instruments that I've collected over the last 25 years, I would be heartbroken. And I think the auction will be wonderful. It'll be very difficult. You know, I know it's very emotional, but it's also the guitar, the Strat, the 61 Strat. You know, I really hope, I was even going to try to reach out to that Irish guy in Lion's Den and be like, come on, man, you got nine figures before the decimal point. Put up some money, man. You know, let's do it right.
It should be here in one of our museums. That's what it should be. But that's for another day, Donald. You and I could talk forever on that. Just before I mention the dates of the marquee, do you miss him as much as ever, Donald?
Absolutely. I don't think there's a night go by that I don't dream about him. And I was saying to Joe, where Joe was the jam and the music, and I suddenly realised, even though it was a new revamped building, I'm going, Rory's in the room. And then, bizarrely, I said it, look, Rory, when his show bands used to play, this used to be the old Palm Court. And this is the only gig Rory and his band could get during Lent, when the church and state shut down everything. And then go back, and I was telling Dan Herden, he said, that's bizarre, he said, because my son does a lot of the social media. Yeah. And they do what happened on this day, you know, 20 years, 30 years ago. And they had posted that Rory had played that particular venue. It was an anniversary.
Wow.
That Rory had been in that, played
that's
in that.
That's amazing.
Venue.
Yeah.
Well, you've been wonderful keeping his memory alive, Donald. And I think what's going to happen in the marquee is going to be so brilliant. Donal Gallagher and Joe Bonamassa, it's been so great having you both here this morning to talk about the Rory Gallagher Celebration, starring Joe. It's going to be live at the Marquee in Cork on the 1st and 2nd of July 2025. Those tickets are going to sell out so quickly, and tickets are on sale now. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. What an honour to be here.
No, delighted, Joe. And Donal, well done to you. You look so like him, by the way.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure, Miriam. Thank you.
Mind yourselves. Take care. Thank you.
Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.